I'm your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to Alchemy, the podcast all about building a business on the front lines of the new economy.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Very excited to welcome a really good friend, Stephanie Freed. She's the CMO of Fandom. Steph, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you on. And, you know, for everybody that's tuning in, Fandom is one of the world's largest fan platform and, of course, always the number one source for tons of information on pop culture, entertainment, gaming. Steph, you come from an incredible background. Prior to being CMO, you were over at Condé Nast. You were executive vice president of marketing over there. And you were at Discovery Communications, Vivo, NBC Universal, ESPN, and fun fact, you love oysters. I know that because you've had my oysters before. Yes. And, you know, it's great to have you on the show. And, you know, Steph, obviously over 20 years experience really, you know, building out some of the most innovative marketing teams in media and amazing career path. And, you know, now you're the chief marketing officer over at Fandom. So why don't you kind of kick us off and, you know, talk to us a little bit about the company. And, you know, you've been there for a few years now. So maybe some of the initiatives that you've led since joining.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jeff. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. You know, I think for me, you know, and you mentioned my past experience, I've always been kind of media obsessed. I love personally television, probably the most. Movies too, and I'm a big actually mobile gamer, but TV for me is like, that's the number one thing that I like to do if I ever have any free time. So I really love working in television, and Fandom is great because it really brings together all of my passions and kind of the insights that, you know, I've dug into with consumers across my entire career, and it brings things kind of full circle for me, which is great. And you know, why I joined. At Fandom, we're doing a lot, growing quickly. Things are changing every day. We've also made a lot of acquisitions since I started at the end of 2019. And that's really helped us build out our kind of cross-platform journey and really become what I like to think of as a one-stop shop for fans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Fandom, the platform, and I love that you say everybody knows it. I always say everyone's been there.
Many people don't know that they've been there.
Yeah. I always tell people that. And then they always text me a couple days later and say, oh my gosh, I just ended up on Fandom. It's like, I know.
I know.
It's amazing. You guys,
Steph, I would say like your SEO is ridiculous. Like, it doesn't matter what you search for. Like you're always going to wind up on Fandom. You know.
I know. I mean, it's great. And really like, and you know what I always say is I know that we have by far more information about, for example, like Luke Skywalker than any other platform or place in the world. And one of the reasons I know that is because if you search for Luke Skywalker, Google's going to rank us first every single time. So the search engine that's the very best at understanding what is going to be the best result for the question that you have is always choosing us because we have such in-depth information on really every imagined world and every imagined world character, which is why we have over 300 million visitors every month to the platform who are searching to dig deeper into the immersive worlds that they love.
So Steph, can we just talk about one thing just because I happened to kind of wind up in Fandom because I was searching for something. So I've been watching The Last of Us.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, have you seen it?
So I'm scared of almost everything and I am too scared to watch. So I've seen bits and pieces. My husband is watching it.
Yeah.
So I like come in and I see bits and pieces and I know how much people love it, but it's too scary for me. I'm a comedy girl. So
I mean, I'm with you, by the way. I do I definitely lean on comedy, but I think what's so interesting about The Last of Us is that it came from a video game, you know, like the story came from a video game, which at first I'm like, I'm not fucking watching that, you know? And then when I started watching it, I'm just like, whoa, this is some serious, like, this is crazy. And it's very entertaining, but it's, there are moments of very, it's very scary.
Yeah. Well, so I love that you said that because we didn't talk about this in advance, but this is like my current. So I'm really, really into data. Like my background is in research and I'm obsessed with like finding new insights and developing better programming and finding new ways to develop the characters that people really love. And I feel like fandom, and it's interesting that you bring up The Last of Us, is we really sit at the intersection of entertainment and gaming. So whereas, you know, a Netflix or an HBO Max, for example, might have really good insights into like their programming, mm-hmm. right? We also know, by the way, like which characters in The Last of Us are, you know, the most appealing, who people like, what parts of the storyline, et cetera. But we also understand the connection with the game itself. And we understand the connection with all of the shows on Netflix and all of the games on Xbox. And so one of the things that I've been really interested in as a theme out of The Last of Us and its success is I kind of believe that for a really long time, a lot of the franchises that were developed in TV and movies were coming from books and comic books, right? So like Marvel and DC, obviously, like Harry Potter or Wheel of Time or Game of Thrones, right? And I really think that the new place or like kind of almost treasure trove of really great IP is gaming. And we've seen that a few times already with Halo, with Arcane, with Cyberpunk, where they're taking these games with heavy like storytelling and plot lines and turning them into really incredible shows and movies. And I think, you know, this is something we've spent some time digging into because we see the overlap between all of the games and all of the different streaming services. So our ability to say, this is the IP you should go after, like this is what you should license because your fans are really into this gaming franchise and here's what you should focus on within that gaming franchise is just incredible. And I think we uniquely have that data. So I'm really excited about that. I love that you brought up The Last of Us because I think that's like the new frontier, basically, for new franchises.
Very cool. And so I think, you know, on the notion of data, like obviously, yes. And from knowing you too, like you're all about leading with data and making decisions from it, right? But from an audience perspective, like how are you actually leveraging that data to connect with the audiences on more of like a, you know, a personalized level?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So we have what we call fan DNA, and that is really our data and the foundation of our business, really. And I think of it, and we use it in a few different ways. So number one, what you're talking about is what I call fan DNA engage, which is really about engaging our users on our platform. So when someone goes to the Last of Us wiki, as an example, right, what is it that's going to be most likely to appeal to them? So whether it's another page within that community, whether it's maybe they're in the gaming part of the community and we think that they're going to be interested in the TV show part of the community, or whether it's another game or another show, or maybe it's trivia or discussions, right? So different ways of engaging with that content. We really uniquely know how, you know, we can recommend the best next thing for that user. And that's really exciting. So we've definitely been integrating that more and more into our platform. We've developed a kind of hub called Fan Central, where people can add their fandoms and we give them recommendations for what they're going to want to do next. And we're also taking that fan DNA engage across our other platforms and acquisitions. So we bought GameSpot recently and Metacritic and TV Guide. We own a PC gaming business called Fanatical, which it plays in a lot of different parts of people's fan journeys. So whether or not they are interested in a review or getting ratings or buying or discussing or diving deep, we can actually meet their needs across all of those parts of their journey. And we do that through Fan DNA Engage in terms of best understanding where that user specifically is going to want to go next. So that's a big track. Fan DNA Insight is what I was talking about a bit with all of the insights into the gaming and entertainment intersection, which is really how we help our clients better understand their businesses, what programs they should develop, what content they should license, what extensions they should look towards, how they should actually create their marketing assets, who they should be targeting. So that's our insights platform. And then we also have a targeting solution called Activate, which helps advertisers find the right audiences within our platform and outside of our platform using our data. So being able to activate that, for example, on social networks. So that's how FanDNA works.
Cool. So I think one thing that I was definitely wanted to dig into is, you know, over the, you know, the last few years, we've seen a huge shift in, you know, obviously, you know, consumer behaviors. And obviously part of that is also due to the fact that we've been hit with, you know, a series of pandemics, recessions, all sorts of stuff. And so, you know, I think viewers, fans, and consumer behaviors have actually shifted quite a bit. Anything that you've been seeing, I think probably COVID, you probably come back to me and say, yeah, we had explosive growth on people spending more time on our site.
We did. Yeah. We had explosive growth, but I think even more than that, we saw a lot of different like phases of how people were engaging with entertainment. So we saw periods where people wanted to like escape, and action adventure was really big. Sci-fi was really big. Mm-hmm. We saw periods where we felt like nostalgia was really kicking in. So like Friends was really big, and Gilmore Girls, and, you know, a lot of the, you know, kind of comedies from the 80s and 90s were really resonating with people. So we really saw a lot of kind of differences in terms of like how people's emotions were changing and how we could view that through the lens of entertainment and gaming, which was really fascinating. Certainly from a gaming perspective, we saw also a lot more connection through gaming than we had seen before. So a lot of games where people are working together with teams were starting to resonate more than before. It was kind of like the only way to like get out of your world was to connect in other imagined worlds. So even people who might not have been engaging with those types of games before, we saw a lot more traction there. So we just got to see, you know, I guess how people like lived and escaped through entertainment during that tough period.
So Steph, you guys have a study that's coming out. I know you guys do that pretty much every quarter, but you're releasing something today about, you know, gamers and the generational differences between, let's just say, parents and kids and how they're gaming together. Talk to us a little bit about the study and what you're excited about with the findings.
Yeah, so we do quarterly studies that are kind of deep dives, or we call them our inside series, into the different categories that we cover to give some pretty unique insights into the key categories, both for those categories themselves, as well as all of the other brands that want to get involved in those spaces. So Inside Gaming is what we're releasing today. We did give a sneak peek preview at the IV Playfronts about a month ago as well. But we really looked into how gamers are playing today, and also the relationships between parents and kids and how gaming brings them together. We had a lot of really interesting findings, both around different generations and how they engage, as well as how brands can engage with gamers. Overall, interestingly, 86% of gamers said that they were influenced to purchase a brand that invests significantly in the gaming space, which was great.
Wow.
A lot of brands are already doing that, but I think it's really smart. One of the top categories, I guess this is not surprising, but still was kind of interesting, was most gamers eat and drink while they're gaming. So making, you know, those categories, I guess, a really good fit. Clearly, a lot of snack brands are already in that space. I think they already understand that. And I know like Philo, and there's a big connection there with gaming too.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, you know, another interesting piece in terms of like how brands should be integrating. the, you know, top factors or things that make people love games are game quality and the storyline and the plot, which again, then lends itself to TV and other extensions, which I thought was really interesting. In terms of like parents and their children, one thing that I thought was really interesting. So children and parents, a lot of the time are playing games that parents grew up playing. And we see this a lot with entertainment too, like Star Wars, for example, is a great franchise where kids get into it watching with their parents. And it's like a point of connection and enjoyment. And then they go to Disney World and they enjoy it more. It's the same thing with gaming. And one of the big things that we found is that it's not just the gaming itself, but it actually gives them an opportunity to like discuss strategy, to do research together. And it's a way that they like learn, they use their brains together to solve things, teamwork, it fosters leadership skills. So there were a lot of really great things to think about and focus on, especially for gaming companies as well, when they're looking to, you know, reinforce all the positive aspects of gaming and gaming together and what that can do for children, since I think there's also, you know, always over time been kind of a negative lens to gaming as well. But I think there is a lot of positives that we found through this study as well that a lot of parents already see and that gaming companies can continue to reinforce as benefits of gaming.
So I think I want to just shift back to a second to TV. So, you know, one of the things that you guys obviously do such a great job with is these build out these communities, right? And I'm a huge fan of Ted Lasso. And so I was like, you know, kind of just looking at the Ted Lasso wiki on fandom, and I was like blown away by the amount of content that's on there. Who does that? Who comes up with all this incredible content on the characters and videos? And it's just like, it's so packed with, like, I mean, it looks like a lot of custom content too. Like, is it the show? Is it fans? Like, who does it?
So that's a great question. So it's fans. I'm also a huge fan of Ted Lasso. Huge. That show, a comedy, is right in my alley and I'm obsessed with it. And I can't believe it's going to end soon. I'm like very sad about it.
But who's your favorite character?
Probably Ted. I know that's really boring. I like Keely too.
Keely, but you know, sometimes she's a little much.
She's so kind though. What I love about her is that she, in every situation, even when she should be angry or even when she should be frustrated, like her first reaction or response is to be kind. She's just like a very kind person.
She's very kind.
I love. And who's yours?
I think it's more of like a tie. Like I love Roy.
Okay.
Yeah. Roy Kent. I love him.
Yeah, of course.
But I really love Rebecca too. Like,
yeah.
I love her. I don't know, everything about her. Like she's powerful, yet she's also like very vulnerable, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I like Ted, of course, but there are times where I just want to strangle him, you know, like, dude, what are you doing? You know?
I know, but he always there's always like a reason.
Right. He comes through for sure.
Yeah.
But there are those moments of just like, oh God. But yeah, I feel like that fandom is so great for a show like Ted Lasso because there's so much water cooler talk, you know?
Totally. And so what happens is, so there's obviously a lot of fans of the show. And what happens is a fan of the show goes on to fandom and they, you know, realize that there are certain bits and pieces of the show or the storyline that's not filled in. And they think, oh, I'm going to contribute to that.
Right.
And they edit the wiki. And then there's admins who oversee the wiki who make sure that those edits are like properly sourced and make sure that they're what they call canon so that it's the truth. So it's not the opinion about the show, but it's literally the facts of what happened in every episode and the details that we know about every single character. And they continue to build and edit similar to Wikipedia, which we're a spinoff from, and make sure that every aspect is true. What they also upload is other things like pictures, the upload videos as well. And then we supplement that because we also have, you know, an editorial branch of our business as well, especially now with TV Guide and GameSpot, which are publishing brands. And we are certainly covering, you know, those shows as well from an opinion perspective. And we'll include links to those articles, links to those videos as well for people who want to go deeper. And then we also have the ability to like create quizzes, to post discussions, which is where you can share your opinions. A lot of people love to do polls, like who's your favorite character, for example.
Yeah.
And it becomes more and more kind of like a community, right? As opposed to a reference source. And it's a community, a reference source, and includes like ratings and reviews. And you can kind of get everything that you love about Ted Lasso right within that kind of safe space.
Steph, I feel like we could do it. We could have a digital fork dinner that's literally just about fandom and one show. The whole,
yes.
Right?
I would love it. Let's do it.
We might have to explore that. So, you know, I want to make sure we get to some questions about you personally before we run out of time. So, you know, Steph, I know you've heard the show before, but we always do some quick fire questions at the end. And, you know, they're meant to be fast. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. First question, what's the craziest thing you've ever done?
So if you ask anyone if I did anything crazy who knows me, they would all say no, because I'm scared of almost everything and I'm very risk averse. But I guess what I would say is that when I got out of college, I started my own business, a touring company. And I moved to LA and I went door to stores selling toe rings. And that was a very risky proposition for sure.
Wow.
But it ended up being really great and pretty successful and a great way to get into a great business school.
Do you still wear toe rings?
I don't. I have a bunch of them. I really should.
Yeah.
Because they're really pretty. I'll send you some pictures.
Oh my
but,
God.
Toe
rings were a thing.
Yeah, they were. I mean, I sold to like Anthropology, and I ended up getting into some big stores. My first store was Fred Segal, which is a big LA store.
Oh, yeah.
Which really helped me. Yeah. So it was great.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Let's switch it up a little bit. What's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you? Make it a good one.
I'm sure there's a lot of embarrassing things that have happened to me, but I've probably also cleared all of those out of my mind so that I don't think about them. The only thing I can think about is when I was younger, I used to go every year to Las Vegas for March Madness for the first weekend because I love college basketball. I went to University of Michigan, go blue. And
go blue.
I went to the Hard Rock Casino with my friends and I threw up like in the middle of the bar. Like the bar is in the middle of the casino and it was like on the bar in the middle. That was extremely embarrassing. And
what did you do? Did you like go back to your room?
Yeah, we weren't staying there. So then we got into a cab where it proceeded to throw up multiple times on the way back to the MGM Grand, which is where we were staying. That definitely sticks out in my mind. I remember it fairly vividly.
All right, that's a good one. That's definitely an embarrassing one.
Yes.
Okay, what's the one thing that people would be surprised to know about you?
Gosh, I guess maybe people might be surprised to know that I love like sitting by myself and watching television. Because I think people always think that.
You're very outgoing.
Pretty outgoing, and like extroverted, and I do really love being with people, but I also need my like alone time to just sit and enjoy my shows a little bit while I play games on my phone, which people also seem to be surprised about, but I'm a huge mobile game player, like Wordle and all those games.
Do you play Wordle?
Oh my gosh, I play Wordle and Worldle and Global and Stadle and Thematic. I mean, I play like
all right, we have to start texting in the mornings with our Wordle score.
What was your Wordle score today?
I didn't do so well today. I got it in 4.
Yeah, I got it in 3 today.
That's
and I was majorly proud. That was hard.
Yeah, that was hard because, you know, I have a bunch of friends who Wordle also, and they got it in like 2. And I'm like, what? How is that possible?
2? That's cheating.
I was like, you guys are cheating.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
So generally speaking, I get them in 3. I rarely get them in 1. I rarely get them in two, actually, but occasionally it does happen. But I'm kind of more of a three.
I'm pretty much a four. Like I'm excited when I get a three. I scream when I get a two.
I know, it's kind of fun. It's like, yes, we got it.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. So if you could switch lives with someone for a day, who would it be?
Do they have to be alive?
Nope.
I think I would switch lives with Queen Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth, why?
Is that a weird one?
No.
Well,
I'm just curious why.
So I was a history major, and I love history and royalty and empires and everything about kind of the changing of the world and the landscape and politics and all that. And Queen Elizabeth was always really interesting to me because obviously she lived for such a long time and through so many different phases of like life very quickly, right? Like, you know, in terms of, you know, when she was little, she was getting, I mean, she was also royalty, but she had dressers who dressed her and, you know, and then now living in like modern society, like seeing those changes. Mm-hmm. And I think the huge responsibility that she feels for or felt for the country and her family and lots of different dynamics to deal with. I would just be curious if I could like understand her and her experiences, which I don't know if you can do switching for just a day, but that's, I would be really interested in seeing, you know, how she really felt about everything and how she dealt with all of that.
Yeah, interesting choice. Very good quick fire questions. I learned a lot about you that I didn't know. But listen, I appreciate you coming on the show and I'm looking forward to reading about the study today and, love fandom, and you know, I'm going to continue using it for all my shows too. Now that I know about the communities, I'm sold.
Awesome. And let's do that digital fork dinner because that actually sounds really fun.
So I think it'd be really fun.
Okay, good. Because I love those. I think you're awesome and all the great things that you do bringing the community together.
Well, you're awesome too. Stephanie Fried, CMO of Fandom, thank you again for coming on.
Thanks so much.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.